So please bear with me. Dr. Daly had an emergency that she had to attend to, and I received these slides yesterday evening. So I'm going to try and do them justice. So we are based at the Center for American Indian Community Health at the University of Kansas Medical Center. And this was really an urban implementation of smoking cessation program. So just some basic statistics about kind of the rates of smoking among American Indian men and women, as you can see, and probably already knew, they're significantly higher than the other racial ethnic groups. Okay, so cigarette smoking among American Indian, sorry, she's got a lot of transitions. So very low cessation and abstinence rates. Cigarette smoking is the number one cause of preventable death among American Indians, and the mortality rates from tobacco-related diseases are double of other racial and ethnic groups. So overall, cancer mortality rates have declined, except the last 10 years in all racial groups they've declined over the last 10 years except among American Indians, in which they've remained stable, and some data actually suggests that they've risen among women. Lung cancer mortality rates have decreased in all populations, including American Indians. However, disparities in survival have also increased. So there's a difference kind of between American Indians and other racial and ethnic groups, and that difference really is traditional use of tobacco. So while not all tribes use tobacco traditionally or historically had used tobacco, there has been this wave of kind of adoption that's happened recently, and so tribes that didn't historically use tobacco traditionally or members of tribes who didn't use it historically are adopting it at, kind of through their own practice. There's very little evidence of recreational use. That's also in the past, there was very little evidence of recreational use. And even if, like, a tribe used tobacco traditionally, not all the individuals in that tribe necessarily did. So that was one thing that we considered when developing this program. Due to the status of tobacco for Native people, negative portrayals of tobacco are normally used in smoking cessation are inappropriate in this community and have oftentimes turn people away from smoking cessation programs. A lot of Native people feel uncomfortable in smoking cessation programs developed for other populations, including if a program's created for, like, the Menominee tribe, it doesn't necessarily work for the Cherokee tribe. And then the development of a smoking cessation program that is appropriate and successful in a heterogeneous Native population becomes exceedingly difficult, as evidenced by quit rates, because there's so much variation among tribes. So our process has began around 2003, and we really started with focus groups. We were approached by an IHS clinic in our community about wanting to create a culturally tailored program for a heterogeneous population, because that's kind of what we have in Kansas. And so we pilot tested, did some development of initial education materials, assessment and further development, and then further pilot testing and additional focus groups, all on kind of the educational materials. We had an effectiveness study in urban communities, and that's what I'm going to be reporting the data on from 2008 to 2014. We also linked it with a culturally tailored internet site about smoking and lung health that is still up today, and we're using that for a randomized controlled trial with our college student population currently. And so you can see how we've just kind of progressed over time. So the program was actually named by community members. We had a contest for the naming, and that's how we got the name All Nations Breath of Life. So it's specifically designed for heterogeneous Native population. And this one was involved in urban implementation. We did do a reservation-based program. And so it includes kind of your evidence-based practices. Every session explores the meaning of tobacco to Native people. One session is devoted entirely to the discussion of traditional use of tobacco. And in a lot of those classes, we'd have an elder come and discuss use particular to their tribe. And a lot of people, particularly urban Indians who didn't use tobacco traditionally, thought that that was very helpful to kind of learn a little bit of history. And then program incentives were tailored to the Native community. So whether it was kind of an aerobic program that was more based on traditional powwow dancing or Native flute music for relaxation. And then also family members were included in the program. So there was one session where family members were particularly invited and they shared a meal together. And community members thought that that was really important to bring the family in. So similar to the presenter who just spoke, we had in-person group sessions. We also had telephone counseling. There was culturally tailored educational curriculum. We did provide pharmacotherapy for free, so we had NRT, patch, lozenge, and gum. We also had Vernaclin and Chantix, and then also the culturally tailored incentives. So this kind of looks at the layout of the program. So you see we start with the phone intake, and they go over different topics. Week one is the quit date, is they're learning about quitting and set. They find out that week two is the quit date. And during different time points, they get different incentives. So week one, because the surveys that we collected were a little bit more intensive, they actually got a $20 gift card. We collected saliva at week one, week 12, and 6 months. So as you can see, it just kind of continues. And then week seven is where we invite the friends and family to come to the meeting, and they learn about how to be supportive of the person that is trying to quit. Each week they also get a quit kit, so that has, you know, hard candy, toothpicks, gum, things that kind of help them with the kind of the needing to have something in their mouth. And then weeks 9 through 11 is just a telephone call that they receive from their facilitator to kind of check in with them, see how they're doing. All of the interviewing is based on motivational interviewing. At week 12, they come back for the group session, and they get their certificate of achievement, whether they've quit or not. We still want to give them an opportunity to kind of celebrate the fact that they actually completed the program. And then at six months, we follow up with them and look at their current status and collect saliva again. The theoretical framework for this process was based on critical medical anthropology, interpretive medical anthropology, and protection motivation theory. Having a legal background, I can't explain those to you. Dr. Daly's information is at the last slide, so if you have questions, please contact her. She is an anthropologist, so she's much, well, better versed in that. So this is kind of a look at what our educational materials look like. They were designed by an American Indian graphic artist that we partner with. And we did receive feedback because we are trying to create this program for a heterogeneous population. When we worked with people from the Southwest, they were like, this is very plainsy. This does not translate well to us, and we're like, okay, noted. So those are being changed and updated to be more reflective of a heterogeneous population. Our graphic artist is a Plains native, so he put a little bit of his own bias in there. But so we received funding from the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities for this, and this is kind of the flow of our participants. I hope it's not too small. It looks small on mine. So we had pretty good retention to the primary endpoint at 6 months post-baseline. We started with 312 participants, and at 6 months had 222 showing up for their follow-up. We also did do some respondents up to 12 months, and we still had a 49% retention rate. So we were pretty happy about that. Baseline characteristics of our participants, roughly 60% were female. We did have a pretty high percentage of participants with higher education. We think that's because a lot of our recruitment was done kind of close to a college and in a college town. And so I think that kind of was indicative of why we were successful at getting that population. When we looked at, you know, workplace smoking rules, the vast majority worked in a location where there was no smoking allowed. We did have some, roughly 15%, who had some allowances for smoking at their employment. When we looked at other recreational tobacco use, about 84% didn't use any other form of tobacco, so no poly tobacco use there. And then when we asked about traditional tobacco use, roughly 41% used tobacco traditionally. Our quit rates, the comparison was done to the rates reported in the literature, because at this point our community was not comfortable with us doing a randomized controlled trial. And so at 12 weeks of just the completers, our quit rate was 37.6, and if we did it intent to treat, it was at 25.3. At 6 months, it was 31.1 of just the people who completed the program, and intent to treat went to 22.1. This is incredibly small, but this predictors of cessation at 6 months. The most significant one that we found was the continuity of a facilitator. So in one area, we had the same facilitator who facilitated probably the vast majority of our groups, more than half. I think we'd had roughly 160 people go through her groups. And so that was the best predictor, was having her as your facilitator. For us, that showed that you get better with practice and over time, and the community really felt that she addressed their needs appropriately. So our successes were a strong personal desire to quit, sometimes to quit for themselves or others. Children was a big factor, our grandchildren, when we were dealing with our elders. A respect for tobacco, and then also the access to pharmacotherapy, primarily varenicline. And then the group support, so being part of a group and being able to share your struggles with people who are in a similar situation. And then, again, the individual facilitator. We're very grateful. So our partners for urban implementation, we did it based in Kansas City metropolitan area, also in Lawrence, Kansas. We also had sites in Detroit, Dallas, and Denver. Something with the D's. So we had local as well as far sites. Are there any questions? Anyone? And this is Dr. Daly's contact information. She can answer, if I can't, anything that you have more thoroughly. Yes, ma'am.
Did you modify what we already asked, or did you start from scratch?
So we based, when we had our focus groups, we looked at the second WIN curriculum, and that was a curriculum that was created for a population, a specific population. And so we had our community look at their materials and kind of tell us what they liked and what they didn't like. So we did have kind of a starting point for our program. Yes, ma'am. We want total commercial abstinence, but it needs to be done with respect of people's traditional use, and not everybody who uses traditional tobacco inhales or smokes tobacco. In another study done by Dr. Daly, she actually found that use of traditional tobacco was a protective factor for quitting, particularly if they weren't smoking it. But tobacco can be used for many things traditionally, such as prayer and gift and things like that, and not inhaling. Yes. smudging gift. Yep, we did. We did. And I don't think that they have analyzed that, so I'm not able to tell you what the results were. I believe I heard our statistician say in this, it didn't serve as, in this particular program, it wasn't a protective factor, use of traditional tobacco. But in a previous study, we did find that. So I think it has to be further teased out, definitely, in this population.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.